Dublin's Talking Sport.
Welcome to Dublin's Talking Sports podcast with me, Ken Doherty, and my good friend, Reggie Corrigan. Thanks for tuning in to catch up on the latest GAA, football, rugby, and all the crack. Enjoy the show, and don't forget, rate and review wherever you get your podcasts.
We have another packed show for you this week on Dublin's Talking Sport. I caught up with Ken early in the show, and Owen Casey gives us his thoughts on both Wimbledon finals this weekend. Declan Drake looks ahead to that clash between Kerry and Dublin in the All-Ireland semi-final. And of course, we caught up with Alan Cawley to talk about Shelburne's 3-1 victory last night against Finn Harps, and also to talk about the defeat of Dundalk in that game by Drogheda. So download the show now, wherever you get your podcasts. Time to turn our attention to football now, and I'm delighted to be joined on the line by the one and only Alan Cawley. Morning, Al. How are you?
I'm good, Reggie. How are you?
I'm not too bad. A little bit nervous watching this game in the background. Fingers crossed, but I won't put the kiss of death on it anymore. It was a busy week, a busy night last night in football as well, and Shelburne got the job done against Finn Harps with a good 3-1 victory in Tolka Park. Declan caught up with Damien Duff after the game. We'll have a listen to that before we talk to you, Alan.
It was a great win. It was an absolutely massive game. I guess every game gets bigger and bigger, but today was a cup final, you could argue, just because of the positions in the league. The only two games that they've won this season was against us, and albeit we were 13 ahead before the game, but they win the game, it brings it down to 10, and it maybe plants seeds, plants doubts in everyone's mind. So it was important that we just kept them at arm's length and obviously pulled away even further.
Fine goal from a set piece to get the lead, but then so disappointing so soon afterwards to find yourselves back on level terms.
Yeah, a really poor goal to give away when I can't say we really felt awfully threatened all night. So disappointing. It will get clipped, it will get shown, and lads will get called out. So there'll be some nervous boys going in to see Joey O'Brien on Tuesday.
That being said, the response was just what you would have wanted.
Yeah, fantastic. And like I said, over the 90 minutes, I think we deserved the game. I don't think anyone can disagree with us in the stadium. The lads played really, really well. I think the goals, if I can just settle them down, because there was that doubt before the game that, oh, it's Finn Harps again, they've beaten us twice. So, no, thoroughly deserved. I thought we built the game really well at times, which is important against Finn Harps to keep the ball. They did that and obviously created good chances as well.
Finally for me, how disappointing is it then to have the game off next week with the positive momentum that you have coming out of tonight's game?
Oh well, listen, it's momentum, I guess, result-wise, of just one game. We've had disappointing results since the return of the break, I guess. But I've been really happy still with the performance. As anyone that watched Sligo last week, we should have won the game. Bows away 2-3 weeks ago, should have won the game. So listen, it is what it is. I get that we have to look after the Irish teams in Europe. I want the league to do well. I want people to see it worldwide around Europe. So yeah, we play a game, but listen, I get why it was called off.
Yeah, somewhat relieved sounding, Damien Duff there. Alan, I suppose, having lost twice already this year to Finn Harps, that was a crucial victory for them.
Yeah, well, it was a big victory, Reggie, a big game, as he said. And I was in Tolka Park last night, and it's a good summary of the game, to be fair to Damien. Bar the setback of the concession of the goal, which was sloppy, as he said, they were fully dominant and played very, very well, particularly in the second half. I thought they were very, very good, and they probably could have added to the scoreline, but it was a big win, a big 3 points, and young Gavin Malloy popped up with 2 goals, and I was very impressed with him in midfield. I thought he played really well. And another young lad, Jack Moylan, getting the third. So a good night for Damien Duff and his troops.
And a great night too for Gavin Malloy, Alan scoring twice. And there's great pedigree here, of course, because his grandfather is the great Theo Dunn, former Shelburne goalkeeper, UCD manager, of course, has shocked Rovers in the Cup back in 84. And his uncle is none other than Tommy Dunn, who you would have crossed swords with, perhaps, would you, towards the end of his career?
Yeah, I crossed swords with Tommy and Theo, would you believe, Declan. In the early days at UCD, Theo used to give me a lift from work to training. So a great man, a great football man. And I didn't actually realise that was his a relation there, young Gavin. So I think it's absolutely brilliant. And he was the one that I picked out in the game last night. I thought he was really good. For one so young, he showed a lot of composure in midfield. And he obviously popped up with 2 important goals. But I think his overall performance showed a lot of maturity as well. And I think, to be fair to Damien, you look at the young lad Hakiki as well, Jack Moylan, Gavin Lloyd, there's certain young fellas getting a chance there, and they have to be good enough as well. But once you get the opportunity, you have to take it, and he certainly took it last night.
And the other game last night was a bit of a thriller as well. 1-0 the result. Dean Williams' first minute strike was enough to give Drogheda a win against Dundalk, against their rivals. They'd be very happy with that one.
Yeah, it's the second time they've beaten him this season, I think, Reggie. And they certainly have a bit of a hoodoo sign over them at the moment. And I mentioned a couple of weeks back with Kevin at Drogheda, he's working off a very, very moderate budget there at Drogheda. But he's hanging on the coattails of all the teams above him that would have double, treble the budget that he has. And he's really producing some big results, and that was a massive one. More so the fact that it's the bragging rights as well, their local rivals, and Dundalk chasing down Shamrock Rovers. It's a major blow for them, but from Drogheda's point of view, and I think we should focus on Drogheda because they were the team at home. Dean Williams came in, obviously, in the off-season as well, one of the summer signings for Kevin, and he's producing the goods with a great goal. So I think it was a great result for Drogheda, and they're doing really well.
Yeah, and of course, it's the second time he scored a winner in the derby this season as well, Alan, because he scored a winner against them in March as well. But from a Dundalk perspective, it's a setback. They had the opportunity to cut Shamrock Rovers' advantage at the top of the table to 7 points last night and have a game in hand. It's an opportunity spurned for them. So Stephen Bradley would have been very, very happy looking on at that result last night.
Yeah, it's a big blow to Dundalk, and it's a blow to the league as well, Declan, because we're looking at it. And as good and all as Shamrock Rovers are, and I was in Tal on Tuesday watching them in Europe, and they were very, very good, despite the fact that they were losing, they didn't have Jack Byrne, they've lost Mandrio, they didn't have Burke. They were very good in the European game. But we want someone to challenge them in the league as well, and Dundalk are the closest rivals at the moment. And we were hoping maybe, just from a neutral perspective, and just for I suppose, an interest perspective as well, that Dundalk would be able to win maybe a couple of those in hand and close the gap and put a bit of pressure on them.
Rovers
Dundalk, but I think it's a blow to the league as well.
Yeah, just on Rovers 3-0 up after the game against Hibernians the other night in Tallaght Stadium. Perhaps some were very fortunate to have finished with 11 men with Rory Gaffney's challenge in the second half, which only earned him a yellow card. But you would expect them to come through next Tuesday away from home and complete the job in the first qualifying round.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're going into a game a 3-0 lead, you should be winning it. And the fact that they were superior, like in all aspects, really, on Tuesday night, Declan, like the Hibernians were one of the poorest I've seen, and you would have covered a lot of European games over the years, and I felt Hibernians were very, very poor. But still, in all, you have to go out and beat what's put in front of you. And I thought Shamrock Rovers gave a very professional, disciplined performance. They were very, very good. They could have added to the tally as well near the end to create a couple of chances. So I think it was a great performance by them. Gaffney, as you say, he was a lucky boy. I'm not sure what he was thinking, a moment of madness, but his performance overall was absolutely brilliant. He set up two goals and scored one as well. So they should get the job done. And they have a busy period ahead as well. That's why, go back to Dundalk's result as well, Declan, it's such a blow for them because Shamrock Rovers are going to be in European action for the next month at least. And it would have been a big opportunity for Dundalk to close the gap even more so with all the games Shamrock Rovers are due to play. So, but from Shamrock Rovers' point of view, it's a big win and they'll get the job done Tuesday.
And Dundalk are at Richmond Park next Friday night. Now, that's going to be spicy, isn't it?
That will be spicy, Declan, yeah. But I think, to be fair to Stephen, I'm not sure if he'll even be focusing on that at the moment. I'm sure he's bitterly disappointed to lose last night because that was the opportunity to close the gap to 7. You'd still have a game in hand. And the more than Damien Duff saying a few minutes ago, planting seeds and putting doubts in people's head, if you were to close that gap, it may have put some doubts in Shamrock Rovers' head. And I keep saying, with the fact that they have so many European games coming up, where Dundalk have no European distractions, it would have been a good chance to maybe close the gap further, but they blew that opportunity last night.
Time for GAA news now, and joined in studio as always by the one and only Declan Drake on a weekend that is packed full of football. And would you believe there's even a Kilkenny football team in action this weekend? Declan, busy weekend.
Yes, indeed. Thank you very much indeed, Reg. That Kilkenny team you're talking about is the junior football team, and they'll be playing in Croke Park tomorrow afternoon ahead of the Dublin-Kerry All-Ireland semi-final. I've seen it all now. A Kilkenny football team playing in Croke Park. I think it can retire happy. But before we go into discussing the big games of the weekend in the company of former Galway player and Dublin selector Brian Talty, the news during the week, of course, that Matty Kenny has stepped down as boss of the Dublin senior hurling team after 4 years years in charge. I want to put on record my thanks and the appreciation of Dublin's Talking Sport here on Sunshine 106.8 to Matty Kenny for all his help and valuable assistance over the last 4 years. It's disappointing it didn't end on a better note for the Galway native, but c'est la vie. I hope that he enjoys whatever the next chapter may be. Sean Lane, our regular hurling analyst, will be on with us to preview the hurling final next Saturday on the programme. We'll talk a lot more about that then, but just wanted to say this morning, best of luck to Matty, and thanks indeed on behalf of Dublin Hurling as well for what he had done. The ladies footballers are in action too today in the TG Cahir All-Ireland quarter-final. They're at Park Sean McDermott in Carrick on Shannon to take on Donegal in the quarter-final of the championship. That of course is a repeat of the league semi-final only a few months ago when Dublin were stung by two late goals and taking their league title off them. Dublin of course not the All-Ireland champions going into a quarter-final this year for the first time in many years, but that's going to be a very interesting game up there this afternoon. 2 o'clock it starts. The best of luck to Mick Bowen and the girls there. We'll have full reaction to that indeed in the show next week. But there's only one gig in town this week, and that is the clash tomorrow afternoon at headquarters of Dublin and Kerry for the right to meet either Galway or Derry in the All-Ireland final in a couple of weeks' time. Delighted once again to be joined on Dublin's Talking Sport this morning by my good friend and former Galway star Brian Talty, former Dublin selector of course as well. Good morning to you, Talts. How do we find you this Saturday morning?
Oh, great, Declan. Looking forward to all these games at the weekend now. And actually saw that Kilkenny team playing here yesterday in Abbottstown as well. So, should be good games. Looking forward to all the games in Croke Park.
Yes, indeed. Fantastic weekend in prospect. Dublin and Kerry, of course. Brian, before we get into the nuts and bolts of that, can I ask you what you thought, firstly, of the victory over Cork in the quarter-final?
Yeah, Declan, it looked as if they kind of just went through the motions and we've gone back to kind of playing the way they did in the league, to be honest with you. You know, it wasn't all that impressive, but they did what they had to do. And I suppose they're up against a Cork team who had a very good defensive system in place, didn't allow Dublin in to create any goal chances or anything like that, you know. But they had done that against Kerry as well. So, they got the business done and I suppose that's about it.
Of course, the big story before that game was the absence of both Con O'Callaghan and James McCarthy. And here we are now, the day before the game. We're not quite sure if one or either of them are going to be involved. The only people that know, of course, are the Dublin camp. And as I heard somebody saying yesterday, those that have printed the match programmes as well. No, of course.
Yeah.
But, the absence of both Con and James, if they are both out, what do they bring to the team that would bring it on?
Declan, you know, two massive players, you know, two very important players to Dublin, and if they're missing, it's a huge loss, to be honest with you. But from what I hear, and we all hear different stories, that you know, just before games like this, I hear James is okay, and that Con is a little bit iffy. But Con O'Callaghan will be an awful loss, and everybody is saying that. You know, I mean, he's a target man for Dublin. He creates loads of space. He creates loads of problems. When he gains possession of the ball, he's very, very dangerous in there. He runs straight at the goal, and he's always looking for goals. But what he does as well, Declan, is that he brings every other forward into it as well. And, you know, you can see the performances of the likes of Cormac Costello when he's playing as well is just massive. So Connor is a huge loss. But, you know, we just have to wait and see. As you said, the only team we haven't seen yet for the weekend is the Dublin team. So we just cross the fingers and hope that the two lads are playing, because they will be a massive loss.
Yeah. What areas of improvement, Brian, do you feel are necessary if Dublin are to get over this very big hurdle? A hurdle that everyone since the championship draw was made has been eagerly anticipating.
Yeah, Declan, every year I think Dublin Kerry match is eagerly anticipated by everybody. You know, I mean, they're a huge rival. But the big improvement really is, I mean, will Con play is the important thing, and get that forward line moving. They were a little bit static the last day. Now, having said that, they kicked a few very good scores, and as I said, Cork had a very good defensive setup in place. But the addition of Con would make a huge difference. But we need to see more work, more movement up front, showing a little bit more for the ball, and a little bit more of a root streak when they get in there, and maybe a goal or two would be important today, you know. But you can't fault the work rate, you know, the tackling, the chasing, the running back, the turnovers that Dublin create. And you know what? Sometimes in these matches, Declan, it's not the big stars that we're expecting to win the game. It's the other guys around them. And look, watch out maybe for the likes of Cormac Costello and for the likes of Paddy Small if Paddy is playing. And we all forget about Kieran Kilkenny. I don't know how we do that, but that man is he's the man that creates so much for Dublin. So he'd be a big plus now with a big performance from him as well.
Arguably, though, Brian, the bigger pressure on Kerry coming into this game, because as we all know, they've had that tremendous run of minor success, but now it's really time for them to deliver on the big stage of the senior championship, although obviously we hope it's not this weekend.
Well, like they don't expect that in Leicester, but in All Ireland and Kerry, to be honest with you, Declan, and it's been a while now, you know, and they don't like looking at Dublin doing kind of five or six in a row either. Like, so the pressure is on Jack O'Connor and his team to come out, give a performance, and get into an All Ireland final. That's the pressure. The Dublin lads, less pressure in a way, if you can say that, going into an All Ireland semi final, because a lot of them, and most of them, have All Ireland medals in their back pockets. So Kerry are seeking that, and that's a difficult one.
And of course, we're talking about Conor Callan and James McCarthy on one side, but it's the David Clifford issue on the other side for Kerry. The will he, won't he play? I've no doubt he probably will as well. But Brian, your own native Galway, they're back at headquarters this afternoon to face Derry in the other semi-final. The winners of this, of course, will be the first team into the final in a couple of weeks' time. First of all, it's great to see the freshness in this pairing, is it, in an All-Ireland semi-final, and a wonderful opportunity for one of them to be playing in the biggest stage of all in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, absolutely, I suppose. You know, Galway have won two All-Irelands, I think, in 98 and 2001, Declan, and the people that beat in the semi-final were Derry. So we're just hoping that's going to continue on. But yeah, it's great to see Derry coming up. The work that Gallagher has done up there is unbelievable. He's just blending them all in together. They're playing great football. They have a system of play. And it'll be up to Galway now in Croke Park to break down that defensive setup that they have. But, you know, Galway have really good footballers as well. And what was pleasing the last day against Armagh was the composure that they played with, and particularly in the extra time. And the young lads showing up as well, like young McDade was fantastic. And young Matthew Tierney at centre forward. So we're hoping that all those guys give a performance today, and that Galway get a little bit more out of maybe Shane Walsh and Comer. But you know, as I said to you with the Dublin game, Decky, it's maybe the lesser lights that may lift it all up again and drive one of the teams on. And obviously, I'm hoping it's going to be Galway.
Of course, Galway were involved in a battle against another Ulster team in Armagh the last day. We hope for a little less activity on and off the pitch this afternoon.
Yeah.
How much of an impact will that have on Galway? I mean, all the way that day, and it was a pity with what happened at the end of it, because it took away from what was a wonderful spectacle on the day.
Listen, Declan, the football between Galway and Armagh was just outstanding. The game was fantastic. Great atmosphere in Croke Park. And unfortunately, as you say, there was an incident going in. But I'm just hoping, I thought actually Galway going in for the extra time, you know, may not have come out and played the way they did after that skirmish before they went in. But it seemed to do Galway good. And you know what, Declan, there's always something like that drives the team on. And you know, for Galway to come out, maybe being 2 points down, young McDade went up and scored a brilliant goal. That has to be motivating for the lads. That has to give them great confidence. And I'm sure, you know, they put up a huge performance in Croke Park, and I'm sure we'll get that again today for them. And I hope it's just going to be good enough.
Yes, I suppose after the disappointment of the hurlers being beaten in the semi-final by Limerick last week, the people of Galway have had the rosary beads and the water, holy water and all the rest of it out this week, hoping that Pádraig Joyce can lead Galway into the All-Ireland final in a couple of weeks' time. So, Brian, the burning question is, in 2 weeks' time, who's going to be making the return trip to Croke Park? First of all, from the Dublin-Kerry game.
It's going to be very tight and very hard to call. All these games in Croke Park the weekend are hard to call. But I just think Kerry might have just that a little bit more experience and maturity in their subs to bring on, like the two Spillans are there, Jack Barry is there. Now there's a man that needs to come on and maybe, you know, take care of Brian Fenton around the middle of the field. He always does a good job on him. So I just think Kerry might just have a slight advantage at the moment. If Conn isn't playing, I think the advantage would be bigger.
We know the heart says Galway.
Did I sit in the fence there right away?
No, but a man of your stature and experience tells nobody to. We know, as I say, the heart says Galway for the second game, but realistically, who's going to come through that one for you?
Another tight game, Declan. The heart and the head say Galway.
Both say Galway. Fair enough.
Yes, I that's hopeful as well, you know.
Can't get any more emphatic than that, tells. Fair
well, you know, I'm just hoping from my own background that it's Galway Dublin in an All-Ireland final, yeah. And that'd be a great day for us. Yeah.
Nearly 40 years on. Oh, we won't mention that today.
We won't mention that today, but it could be a different day.
Pleasure as always. Thank you very much indeed for joining us on the programme. We hope to catch up with you soon.
Not at all, Declan. Thank you.
Gormila Mahagut to Brian Talty, former Dublin selector, giving his views. He's saying a Dublin Galway All Ireland final in a couple of weeks' time. We hope he is right, certainly on the first part of it anyway. And I wouldn't mind to see Galway in the final either on the other side of it. Okay, finally on the programme this week, in this section of it anyway, we're going to talk a little bit about hurling. And today is a special day for the people of Crumlin because the 7th Jim Boggan Memorial Cycle takes place from Tagmon in Wexford all the way back to Orris O'Toole in O'Toole Park in Crumlin in honour of the late great Jim Boggan, who did so much for Crumlin hurling and Dublin hurling as well. Well, earlier on in the week, I took the opportunity to sit down with club member Mick Mangan to discuss the event, and I began by asking Mick to tell us a little bit more about the great man.
Yeah, Jim Boggan has been involved in Crumlin GAA from the beginning, really. We merged with St. Agnes's in 1970, and Jim basically had looked after several hurling teams, camogie teams, football teams also, but his success over the years has been phenomenal for a club of our size. If you take that, you know, we've won a number of minor hurling championships, under 21 championships. Jim brought our senior hurling team to a Leinster, two Dublin championships. They played in two Leinster finals, 78-79. Won the 79 one. We're unlucky to lose an All-Ireland final, an All-Ireland semi-final. But then I suppose in 1985, Jim looking after the Camogie team with Billy Maloney, they went on to win an All-Ireland Camogie senior final here and actually in O'Toole Park. In terms of Dublin, he was a selector on the team that won the 1965 All-Ireland Minor Hurling title. Which hasn't been, Dublin haven't won it since, or any All-Ireland title. In various clubs over the year, Crumlin GAA has competed in many championship finals, unfortunately losing out on them. But to Jim, it wasn't about, although he was very successful, it wasn't about the winning of them. It was about the competing. And most importantly, was to keep players playing, keep them involved in the club. He didn't want to lose players. To various different, you get players to go off, you want to actually chase after them and get them back playing, which nowadays people don't really have the time to do that. So you don't have people like Jim Boggan anymore going around chasing players and getting them up playing.
He was, of course, involved with the Dublin Minor team in 1983, which had the great Niall Quinn on it as well. That's 40 years next year. That's hard to believe as well when you think about it, Mick. Unfortunately, Jim passed, but his legacy, his memory around this area is fondly remembered. And the idea of the Jim Boggan cycle, how did that come about? This, I believe, is the 7th year of it, although, of course, you have lost a couple of years through COVID as well.
Well, really, the Jim Boggan cycle was the brainchild of Jerry Gavigan. And Jerry rang me a number of years ago and said, look, I have this idea about doing a cycle. And I suppose there was a few people in the club who said, well, Jim Boggan and cycling, you know, he wasn't involved in cycling. But I don't think they were missing the point, because the point was about a commitment to cycle from Wexford back to Dublin for people who are not professional cyclists. It's 148 kilometres. It's a tough job to do. And when Jerry Gavigan said, look, put it out to the club, we're looking for people to do a cycle from Wexford back to the club, either over 100 people. We had to limit it to 100, but he had over 100 people wanting to do it, and also decided we'd make it a fundraiser for the youth of the club. And every year that we've run it, apart from the 2 years of COVID, it's been a fantastic success.
How much preparation actually goes into it? When do you start meeting to put the arrangements in place for July the 9th?
Well, really, our meeting place would take place up in Jerry and Ruth Gavigan's home. They'd start early, maybe February, they'd send out a text, can we get together, have a chat. There's a lot involved in it. Ruth would dish out the jobs. You know, she'd want John A. Murphy to do this, Peter Elliott to do that, Vanessa Langan. She'd have a few jobs for myself. And then she'd chase up on you to make sure you were doing your job. But there is a lot involved in it. You've got to contact all the GAA clubs, one. You've got to contact the guards. you've got to contact Cycling Ireland. You've got to get everybody's insurance and all the names in. Everything has to be up to date, you know. And that's something that there's a lot of work involved in. And the people who's doing the cycle, obviously, were very great. They don't see the work that goes into it. Then it's design a jersey. Meet with the committee. Is everybody in agreement with the jersey? Then go after sponsorship. Get the names on the jerseys. Get some money in from companies. And there's really a lot of work in that. And to be honest with you, the likes of John A. Murphy, myself, Peter Elliott, Vanessa Langan, we do the small jobs. Ruth and Jerry, really, to be honest with you, do 90% of it. They really do.
So it's coming around on July the 9th. It starts in Wexford with a poignant visit to Jim's final resting place before you make the way back up the motorway. It's an arduous task, but there's a few pit stops along the way.
Yeah, we'll be stopping three different GAA clubs on the way back, and we'll be fed. We have our own, Huey Brennan will be here, Barbara Brogan, and all the girls of the club will be there. When we arrive in each club, the food is laid on. Have a toilet break. If you need a physio, we also have physiotherapists there to give people a rub down. And then we're back up on the bike and to the next GAA club. And again, we'll repeat the process again. And that's basically it until the last stop then is normally in Blessington GAA club. And from there then, we're brought down to Talla Stadium. We stop outside Shamrock Rovers to kind of catch up. We'll have the stragglers. It normally takes about 20 minutes to catch everybody up in a group, and then everybody cycles down in one group. We normally have the guards bring us down right to the club door.
Yeah, and the sense of satisfaction when you arrive back here in O'Toole Park, the splendid surroundings of O'Toole Park, which we're sitting in at the moment, looking out onto the pitch, that's a tremendous sense of achievement when you get everybody back in safe and sound.
Absolutely, when everybody's in safe and sound. When you arrive down, when you come down Larkin O'Toole there, you have all the families from the people who are doing it and just club members who come out and give them a rousing round of applause for doing the cycle. And, you know, the atmosphere is absolutely electric. You know, you see people doing the cycle and they're struggling on it. I've done it myself the first year, but they're struggling on it coming down the road. But what keeps them going really is the club members who will be out there with their jerseys and their flags supporting them coming down the road. And it really is something to behold. Anybody that's been there over the years just love coming out. People on the road here that would have known Jim, or maybe not even known Jim, are out to support the club on the day, you know.
There are not too many people like Jim Boggan. There are still a lot of great people involved, not only with this club, but other clubs around the city and county as well. But it'll be a long, long time before we ever see the likes of a Jim Boggan again.
I don't think we'll ever see the likes of Jim Boggan again. Had Jim Boggan not been involved in Crumlin GAA, he would have been a multimillionaire, because Jim always had his the boot of his car full of Hurleys, Nicks and Stocks that he'd bought himself. And, you know, Crumlin is quite, you know, going back in the 70s, 80s, quite a poor area. Kids growing up, they'd arrive up at no boots. Jim seemed to find these things for these kids to keep them interested. The great ability Jim had, Jim could put his hand in the boot of the car and he had, say, a hauler that he knew, and he could pick up a haul and say, that's the one for you. And he'd know by you over the years the perfect weight of the haul that you required, and he was always bang on. You never had to put your hand in the boot of the car and say, no, Jim, that doesn't suit me. He just had that gift, you know, and he had the gift of bringing people together. And to me, personally, Jim was like a father. You know, his death was absolutely sent shockwaves through Crumlin, through Dublin, and throughout the country. The message we got from Inter-County Hurling Stars, current Stars and previous Stars, Jim's funeral actually took place in the club here in the back room there. Jim was laid out in the back room of the club, and I've never seen a crowd like it. They walked behind the coffin. The coffin was carried, and we walked from here all the way up to the church in St. Agnes's. And I haven't been at a funeral since that was as big as it. It was absolutely massive. But he'll always be remembered in Crumlin GAA. No matter what time goes by, Jim will always be there.
Looking forward to dropping in on it next Saturday night. All right. Mick, well, listen, thank you very much indeed for taking the time out of your busy schedule to come and talk to us this morning. We wish you every success with the event, and well done on keeping Jim's great memory alive as well.
Declan, thank you very much. And we all look forward to next week.
It's time to turn our attention to tennis now. I'm delighted to be joined on the line by Owen Casey. Morning, Owen. How are you?
Morning, Reggie. How are you?
I'm very well. Like I said, a bit of excitement going on here in the background, watching the rugby out of the corner of my eye, and Ireland going okay, 10-0, but and we're down. They're down to 14 men for the remainder of the game. They have 13 at the moment, because one yellow card as well. So things going in the right direction from an Irish point of view. But in the tennis, it's been a hell of a week. There's no doubt about it. We've got the women's final today, of course. Ons Jabeur ended that brilliant run from our good friend Tatiana Maria, of course, and. So she's in the final and bidding to be the first woman from an Arab country and indeed from the continent of Africa to get a victory. So it'll be a big final and should be a very entertaining final against Rebenika today as well.
Absolutely. She's got a lot of variety and a lot of talent.
We're having trouble there with that line from Owen as well. We'll try and get him back. A little bit of a problem with the phone lines this morning, but that's not anything that we're not used to these days. So we'll get Owen back on the line in a moment. Just I'll give you a running commentary on the rugby in the background while we're going with it. So as I said, Ireland have the man advantage, no doubt about it, at the moment. So there's a red card for New Zealand. It was a very reckless clash coming in, there's no question about it. Just seeing the replays of it there again, no arms, so I think it's justified. But I think we might have Owen back on the line now. Owen, have I got you again?
Yeah, Reggie's, don't know what happened there. Sorry about that.
Yeah, you were just about to talk about Rybakina and Jabeur.
Yeah, so basically, Ons Jabeur, she's very talented. She's got a different kind of game style. She can adjust as the match goes on. She's got a lovely little slice on her, so she can play little drop shots, or she can slice deep, or she can drive through the ball. Rybakina is very much a powerhouse. She stands over 6 feet tall. She's got the most leading aces on the women's tour. Hits an incredibly strong ball from the back. So I think it's going to be a very interesting match, because for the simple reason is you have two contrasting styles. Ons Jabeur isn't necessarily a very tall individual, but where she makes up for it is in her ability to change things up. Either during the match or even in the middle of a rally. So it'll be very interesting to watch how that unfolds. But, to call it, I don't know. I think it's going to be very close, because either player can play exceptionally well and then the other person can come back. So, I would like to see Ons Jabeur win, because I like the way she plays. But she has to deal with that serve, and that's going to be the main issue today.
Were you surprised that it ended up with this final in the end? Because I think your mind was elsewhere on who might get there.
Yeah, not really. Because first of all, grass is very unpredictable, and the players don't play a whole lot of weeks on it. You know, they're only playing about maybe 6 weeks max, depending on how they do at the French Open. Some of them only play 4 weeks. So there's not a whole lot of time on us. They don't really put a whole lot of effort into getting ready. They do the mandatory pre-tournament warm-ups, and then they play, and then they get out of there and they go over to America, and some of them go back to Europe for clay courts. So you're always going to get different kind of results, and there's no one really dominating the game. I know escapes me now, the number one seed. She was playing really, really well for the last couple of months, but again, on grass, it's a situation where there's no form. I think if you're on hard courts or on clay courts, the lead-ins are much longer. The seasons are much longer. They're on it for nearly 2 months, 3 months before, you know, there's a break in the cycle. So everybody's got a good rhythm on it. Whereas grass, you know, it's just literally, we drop into England for 4 weeks and then we leave.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't get to see much of it elsewhere, that's for sure. All right, it is unique in that sense. It'll be interesting to see what way that turns out. Hard to call, as you said. But in the men's then as well, I suppose, disappointment during the week. It was sad to see Nadal not able to fulfil his semi-final fixture through injury. And I think that was a semi-final that many people wanted to see as well, because Kyrgios is such a fiery character. It would have been just great to see him playing against Nadal, see how that might have worked out, you know?
Yeah, Nick's got a good winning record both over Rafa and Novak. The thing here is obviously Nick had a much easier round previously in the quarterfinals. He played Christian Garin from South America, who wouldn't be a renowned clay court player. three sets, and then Nadal's going five long with Taylor Fritz. Now, during that match, he pulled his abdominal muscle. Serve went down from 120 to 100 miles an hour, so he's going to have to work a hell of a lot harder to hold serve. And that in itself, the match is prolonged, so I think he would have been... It would have been a little bit more disadvantaged, had, let's say, if the match was played out on its own without any injury, playing that length of time, and Nick having an easier round. But saying that, you know, Rafa's... Every time people count him out, you know, he was written off 10 years ago, and, you know, he's still playing. So he's a hell of a competitor, and even to beat Fritz with an abdominal tear and only a serve going in at 100 miles an hour just shows how good he actually is, that you can beat players of this quality with pretty much hitting kind of a sub-second serve as a first serve. But I think as a crowd, I would have been disappointed if I had tickets for yesterday and only getting one match.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. The other one, of course, Djokovic now in the final, but he took care of Cameron Norrie. You know, the dream was there for a while. It even started off like it was going to continue, but Wimbledon so disappointed that, of course, their home player didn't get there.
We've seen that dream many times, Reggie, with Henman, I tell you. But no, the only thing that's concerning me a little bit is just how Djokovic is starting off against Jan Sinner in the quarters. He's down two sets to love. Against Norrie, he loses the first set. And yesterday, he was very poor in the first set. I think against Sinner, Sinner was playing exceptionally well. I think he's playing at the peak of his game. And it was just a question of would he dip, and he did. Kyrgios, best server in the game. One of the best servers, not the best. One of the best servers. And then very unpredictable. Novak, one of the best returners. Novak needs to get off to an incredible start, because if he doesn't, it could be over very quick. With clay courts and hard courts, you can kind of play your way back into five sets because the rallies are longer. If Nick is throwing in bombs and the rallies, there's nothing on any game. You know, the games are lasting 1.5, 2 minutes. Novak's not going to get into a rhythm. And then now Kyrgios can absolutely have a lash on his serve. Any second serves, ball in court, just go for the first ball, not give Novak any rhythm. Because Novak's going to want to sit back, play lots of balls, move Kyrgios around and get him tired. Nick doesn't want to do that. So it's going to be very interesting to start. I think if Novak gets off to a great start, then I think Nick's got a big problem. But if Novak doesn't get off to that start, and he gives Kyrgios an easy first set, I think it could be a very difficult match for him.
Yeah, that's interesting, because most people, I mean, I don't think Djokovic has lost a match since 2017 in Wimbledon. So, you know, most people would be saying he's nailed on favourite to win this. But the way you're talking, Kyrgios is in with a real shot here.
I don't think he could be slight favourite. I wouldn't say he's, like, against Corey, he was definite favourite.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't say he's like definite favourite here, because it's so unpredictable. Like, Kyrgios is serving 130 mile an hour serves. Now, if they're not coming back, the games are easy. Novak's not getting into points. And now, as I said, you know, in these situations where you're holding serve relatively easy, it does put pressure on individuals. And if you go into a tiebreak, let's say, you know, I always look at the tiebreakers and have a look at what happened over the set and say, well, hold on, he was holding serve a lot easier. He was winning more points off the other guy's serve. That's going to weigh favorite, I think, in Kyrgios. If Novak's not putting any dent into Nick's service games, and Nick's coming in out of the games to love in 15, and then Kyrgios is getting to 30s and juices, that will play a big part in a tiebreak situation.
Okay. Just finally and quickly, Kyrgios, the way you talk about him, you're calling him Nick, it seems like you have you like him.
A lot of people don't seem to
like his attitude. What do you make of all that? Is it just for show? Is it just to upset the other players?
No, I mean, if you watch Murray over the years, they vent their frustration out on their boxes. You know, you see Nick there in the quarterfinals, he was just, you know, someone said to me, would you be his coach? I said, I couldn't take the abuse.
No.
The thing is that, you know, he's one of these individuals that he's never going to keep quiet. That's not his style. Now, if something's irritating him, he'll go after it. And it's a little bit like Mac back in the kind of 80s. They use it to blow off frustration.
Yeah.
If you look at his match against Tsitsipas, he did nothing wrong. He played his tennis. Tsitsipas was firing balls out of stadium, firing balls at Kyrgios. Nick had a go at the umpire. He got done for that. So he got fined because he was verbally abusing.
Yeah.
But he wasn't verbally abusing Tsitsipas.
Yeah.
So it for me, I mean, it's like the press, I think, are giving him a hard time because they've got nothing else to write about. You know, he's a good player. Well, let's make up stuff and let's you know, throw this stuff into the mix. I think it's different than what you normally see. You know, the likes of Nadal and Novak, they stay quiet.
Yeah.
But I've seen Novak have, I've never seen Nadal or Federer have a go at their box. But I've seen Novak have a go at his box a couple of times.
Yeah.
And something that players do, and just Nick does it a little bit more than others. But I think tomorrow's final is going to be one of the best finals from a noise point of view. And it's going to be switching more, I think, to a football match rather than a tennis match.
Thanks for listening to Dublin Stock and Sport on Sunshine 106.8 from myself, Ken and Reggie. Have a good weekend.